Good evening and welcome to the HIV Hour.
Good evening, Josh.
Good evening, David.
Good evening, Sue.
Good evening. Yes. Good evening.
Yes, are you all right?
Yes, I am. It's nice.
It's been a while, actually.
It has been a little while since we've been in the studio, so it's always nice to come in.
Yeah.
After a period of not coming in.
So, yes, it's nice to be back in the studio. I don't know, because it feels like I've not been here for a while in the show.
Yeah.
But I have.
Yes, you have. Yeah, you did that help just with the end of year show, didn't you?
Oh,
yes. You had in January.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That was brilliant, wasn't it?
That was good looking at the highlights of last year. Yeah. Mm, yeah. Yes. We had did some amazing stuff. And we've got some amazing stuff coming up this year, including this evening, don't we?
Yes, we do. Yes. So, we've got John. I'll say John. Let's see your surname again.
John Jaquess.
Jaquess. Great name.
Hello, John. Welcome.
Yeah. So we'll have John on shortly for an interview. And we've got another interview that Philip did with a lady called Anna Brewster, who is the CEO of a company called The Food Chain in London. Have you heard of them?
I have. Food Chain. They're one of the longest running HIV charities that I'm aware of, actually, in London anyway.
Oh, right. So, yeah. Well, that'd be interesting. So we're going to play that later as well. So, and some community news. And we're going to talk about the sad news about the Sussex Beacon as well, some changes going on there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some more community news. So shall we get on with the show?
Because it's
a fun-packed show.
It's a very fun-packed.
So it's really sad. Marianne Faithfull died this week.
This week, yes, just a few days ago.
So we'll play this track, The Ballad of Lucy Jordan. We'll see you on the other side with John.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Oh, that was The Ballad of Lucy Jordan, one of my partner's favourite songs, actually.
Oh,
yeah, he likes driving through Paris with the wind in his hair.
Don't be old.
Yeah. Anyway, welcome back to the HIV Hour. I'm in Brighton and Hove, 97.2 FM and on DAB Plus Radio. Don't forget, we have a fantastic website where you can look at our presenters and previous episodes. That is www.hivhour.org.uk. And we do love listening and hearing from you listeners. So please do drop us an email at info@hivhour.org.uk. Sue, would you like to introduce our guests?
Oh, yes,
please do.
I'd like to introduce you to the fabulous John Jaquess. Not only is he a colleague, he's also a very dear friend, and it's so fabulous. And I didn't realise, John, that's your first time in the studio and on the HIV Hour. Welcome.
Thank you, Sue. Yes, my first time here.
How does it feel to be here?
It feels absolutely great. Wow. In the radio studio. I've heard so much about what goes on here. So, hey.
Oh,
let's move on from that.
Okay.
So, welcome to the show, John. We're pleased you come on the show.
Thank you.
Could you just tell us a little bit about, your journey with HIV and you know, I know it's it can be a long journey, but it's just starts. Mm.
Well, what I'll do is I'll try to condense it.
It's a difficult one to have in.
Because actually it is a long journey.
Yeah.
But it started 24 years ago. It was actually, you know, whilst my diagnosis was not until the May, you know, as a result of the diagnosis, I was able to track back and I worked out when I actually seroconverted, and that was in the January. So January 2001, a really memorable time for me. So this time of year is quite memorable. And, you know, I suppose one of those things that we tended to do, you know, we thought we were invincible in those days. Mm-hmm. And you know, I probably thought I was invincible as well. But, you know, I had a massive whammy that year. In the space of a year, of seroconversion, I was on treatment, which was almost unknown in those days. Mm. But there was a reason, was because I got my diagnosis in the May, and 2 months later in the July, I was diagnosed with an opportunistic cancer. I had two lots of surgery in that first year. And of course, it meant that my CD4 count dropped like a stone. Mm. So you know, I started treatment, and I remember, and the one thing I'm so proud of now is that actually I started treatment on a research project.
Right, really?
And research is so important. Yes. Because it's the research, and I've been on research projects throughout that 24-year period. Mm-hmm. And I'm so proud of that because I've helped other people in that process, and it's fantastic. Because it was still early days of treatment. And honestly, it was pretty toxic in the early days. Mm. Lots and lots of side effects. So I honestly didn't expect to be here today. Mm. I thought if I look after myself, really look after myself, I might make it to 60. Mm. To actually achieve 70 was just unquestionable, absolutely unquestionable. But you know what, guys? Last Saturday, I celebrated my 70th birthday, and I was skiing in the process.
Well, you look about 50. Get out of here.
Yeah, it's your birthday, wasn't it? You went skiing, wasn't it?
I was skiing for a week.
Yeah.
And actually, yes, on Saturday, on my birthday, the ski conditions were fantastic. And I skied and skied the Black Run 4 times.
Wonderful.
So it just felt so good. And yeah, what a way. It was planned. That was what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Because when I was 30, I used to ski on my birthday. So it's just what a journey. Yeah, what a fantastic journey.
And you're such an advocate for HIV. Everything really to do with it, aren't you? Your job is...
I am. Yeah, it's something that, you know, I did a lot of work. I've done a lot of different things throughout my career. What I decided I wanted to do was I wanted to, apart from taking part in research projects, I wanted to give something back. Mm-hmm. And it was about finding what was it I could do to actually help other people. And it was actually the receptionist at the clinic in Brighton who said to me, "John, why don't you think about education?" Mm. Mm. And lo and behold, I said, tell me more.
Yeah.
And she introduced me to Sue.
Yeah.
And that was 7 years ago.
Right.
I think it's 7 years ago.
I think
maybe
it might be
eight, actually. Maybe 8 years ago, actually. I think it's 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And that was when I started as a positive voice speaker.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's been so empowering for me to actually talk about living with HIV. Mm. Sharing those experiences, and it's something that I've wanted to learn more and more and more. Yeah. And that's why, obviously, I'm involved in multiple things. Mm. I'm the community trustee for the British HIV Association. I'm a member of the steering group of UK Community Advisory Board. I'm a member of the Sussex HIV Network. I'm a patient representative at Brighton, and we go on and on. And I'm also a community representative on the steering group of the NICHE program. And the NICHE program is actually a really, really important program.
What's that?
It's looking... Don't ask me to tell you exactly what NICHE is, because actually it's quite a complex, But what it's looking at and studying is actually all about living well with HIV. So it adds the fourth 90 into that, the three 90s.
Mm. Yeah.
So not only diagnosed and on treatment and suppressed, but actually living well.
Yeah.
And that is so important. Mm. It's something that I am so passionate about. Mm. You know, hence... Hey, I was out skiing.
Yeah, at the age of 70, yeah.
Exactly.
On a Black Run, no doubt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, like 70, look, age is a number.
Mm.
As I said to somebody, hey, it's the new 50. Come on, let's have fun, you know.
Yeah, I guess
John,
so.
John, can I ask you a question? I mean, I've known you right from the beginning, and it's been a pleasure, and still is a pleasure, working with you and collaborating and some of the amazing work that you do and we do together. But what I'd like to ask you, before your diagnosis, did you know much about HIV. Did you know what was going on? How did you feel when you got that diagnosed? Tell us.
Well, actually, I suppose I didn't know as much as I would have liked to have known.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, I date back, you know, if we think of the series It's a Sin, well, actually, the It's a Sin series was like reliving my own life. Because, and I think what I've said to you, Sue, in the past, and I've said to many people if they mention it when we're doing talks and things, for me, what I will say to you is actually some of the scenes, for example, in the hospital and so on, actually were much worse. And, you know, I've stood by the bedside of friends and I've held their hands when they've been dying in the old Middlesex Hospital in London, which of course is no longer there. And but you know, we've been to the Fitzrovia Chapel recently. And you know, I will never ever forget walking into that hospital and along the corridor and into the ward to see my friend Peter, whom, you know, I'd had dinner with a few weeks before. No indication there was anything wrong. He got a bit of a cough, I think, maybe at the time. And he collapsed in his apartment, and he was found in his apartment collapsed. And it was unfortunately too late because he only survived for a few days. So, but equally, you know, I do go back right to the start. And I remember my closest friends and confidants. I remember at standing at the bar in a club in Ibiza and being told that, John, we've got something to tell you. We've both been diagnosed positive and we're going to die. And, you know, we were only in our
20s. Heartbreaking, isn't
it? It was so heartbreaking. And I, you know, it makes me shiver and it makes me cry. And unfortunately, Ralph did die. But Gary's still alive to this day. And it's fantastic because he survived until treatment. And he went through some awful treatments. But he survived and he's around to this day. And he, you know, he still lives in the States now. But actually, what was so important is that when I got my diagnosis, you know, before the days of the internet and all of this sort of thing, I was like, I need to speak to Gary because I knew what Gary had gone through. I need to speak to him. I need to find out what he did. And he at the time was in Southern California, 8-hour time difference. I need to speak to him. And I remember coming away, I've got to speak to Gary. And needless to say, you know, probably it was 5 o'clock that evening when it was 8 o'clock in the morning there or 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, I did speak to Gary. It was great. But that was the key thing. And I know that it was like, I need to speak to someone.
With lived experience.
And who could I speak to? And I suddenly remembered some really great friends of mine who'd, you know, who'd acted as support and carers for someone who was in those days, you know, living with, who was dying and living with AIDS. And it was, and I immediately rang them. I was driving back to my office at the time and I was talking to them as I was driving. But just them listening to me and saying, well, John, you'll be all right, you know. You know, and just
hearing that voice that you're going to be okay from someone that had an understanding obviously made that really big difference.
Made such a difference, which is, you know, why peer support is so important. And it can come, peer support is, has so many different meanings and, but it's so powerful and it's so important because ultimately I know how much I need people to be able to talk to. Mm. It's about sharing experiences.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Someone to listen sometimes.
Exactly.
That's all you need. Yeah.
Somebody to listen to. Yeah. Somebody share experience. Yeah. How did you feel when you went through that?
Yeah.
And how did you cope with it? You know, I'm a great believer, and Sue knows this. Mm. I hate expressions, problems, issues, and things like that. They're not. They're all challenges. Mm. Life is full of challenges. Challenges are there to help us learn and grow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, yes. You know, what I do, I just love, it's like, oh, you know, give me a complex challenge. Hey, right, I'm going to find a solution.
Hold John on.
Look, life is about having fun, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. we will meet the challenges, you know. Mm. And I can tell you, HIV was a pretty major challenge for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what I love now is I love to be constantly learning more, learning about all the new things, and doing what I'm doing with British HIV Association, and also with UK Community Advisory Board. I'm constantly learning about new things. Mm. And I can use that to help other people, and also
as well as yourself, John.
As well as myself.
As well as you, don't forget about yourself. Yeah. As well as yourself, absolutely.
Yeah.
The BEAV conference, the British HIV Association, is in Brighton this time, isn't it?
It is. The spring conference is at the Dome in Brighton. It is, it's absolutely fantastic.
And the first time it's been in Brighton.
It's as far as I know. Yeah. First time.
I'll be there.
So and
you can get tickets. They're about £30, I think, for a lay person.
Well, certainly for community people. I haven't got all the figures on the top of my head, so I'm not going to misquote.
No, we can put that on the website.
We can.
Sure.
It's really really great. So
it's Wednesday the 23rd of April Friday the 25th of April at Brighton Dome, which is a fantastic venue.
Yeah, good. And we've got some great. Speakers, and actually what I will say is I'm very proud that I am co-chairing the opening event, which is with Jaime Vera, Professor Jaime Vera, who is also local, of course.
Yes.
And it's about brain health.
Right.
And that is, I'm finding that is something I am really excited about. And we've got some great speakers from community and from the specialist sector. So really important that is to us all. At your brain health as opposed to challenges with mental health problems.
Okay. Well, mental health is so important for the immune system, isn't it?
If
you feel down and depressed and run down, you are likely... Yeah.
But this is brain health. Yes. This is about, and I actually went on, you know, another clinical trial, and I had to have two brain scans, one at the start, one at the end.
Yeah.
And you know what? I was like, when I found out it was a brain scan, oh yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And because I was like, I want to know, you know, I want to know, is my brain still going to be working, or is it likely to, you know, start to give me problems and lead to, you know, the dreaded dementia or whatever, and how might I deal with it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm used to doing multiple things all the time.
Mm.
And if I can't do that, oh my gosh, it really challenges me because it creates stress.
Let me ask you another question, John. As a person living with HIV, the word stigma is very relevant at the moment, isn't it? We know it's no longer a death sentence. We know we're going to live long and healthy on our medication, and we can't pass it on. But we're still, as people living with HIV, enduring stigma. Share with us if there's any stigma you have endured as being living with HIV in those years.
Oh, gosh. I can't even start to say the amount of stigma, and it's not just actual stigma; it's self stigma.
Mm.
You know, I had a very senior role in a major healthcare related company, and during that time, you know, I was afraid to talk about my health condition because actually I was afraid that I would not be wanted in the company, you know, to put it bluntly.
Mm.
And So therefore, I couldn't talk. And equally, during that time, I also actual. Mm-hmm. You know, there was, you know, there was a colleague, you know, because they didn't know the difference between HIV and AIDS. I was ill. So, you know, it's important to know these things. You know, I'm quite a strong character, thank goodness. But I'm and it does not matter what environment I'm in, I will actually stand up and go state they're afraid of stigma. And Sing Week next week.
Yes, yeah.
You know,
February.
Yeah, 10th of February. It's outside Brighton. You go up there, and what happens is the GP, another so-called category, actually, the clue's in the letter H. Human. Human immunodeficiency virus. Yeah. We are all, our sexuality, our colour, whatever is, we are all subject to HIV. And therefore, it's important we get tested.
John, you had a bit of a situation, which I love to hear it. I know it's harrowing, but I love to hear it. You had a bit of a situation... in a hospital.
Bring a fast trauma, why don't you?
It's going back quite a while now. But yeah, I had to, a hernia operation. You know, straightforward operation. And I was asked to go in at sort of 8 o'clock in the morning. I was there at eight, and I was expecting to go in for the surgery straight away. And I waited and I waited and I waited. And I didn't go in for surgery until after 7 o'clock in the evening. And they could not and would not tell me why. And they didn't say anything until I came out. And then they told me, well, I had to be last on the list because they had to sterilise the operating theatre after my surgery.
Oh, my God.
Because I was living with HIV. Ooh. I mean, when I was a bit dozy as well in the recovery room, you can imagine how that made me feel. But I tell you what, and I'm gonna then jump from that, which was probably, gosh, you know, about 20 years ago, and then I bring it forward to immediately prior to the pandemic. And then I had to have surgery in cancer and then plastic surgery. So I had to have three lots of surgery in 2 days. And when I went back for the second, for the third lot of surgery, the reconstruction surgery, they said, "Hi, John, welcome back. You're the first on the list." I was like, yes. They understand I can't pass on HIV to anyone.
And it's great to hear what happened and what should be happening.
Exactly.
So you've got that scenario of both, you know.
Yes.
It's a slow dribble, isn't it? It's like a trickle of
change, isn't it?
We still hear about those stories.
We do.
But I tell you what was really interesting was that when I was on the operating theatre, because it was all done by local, I'd got the surgeon and I'd got about three nurses and, you know, specialist nurses all around me. And we were talking the whole of the time about the way HIV's changed and progressed. I was telling them about what I do as a positive voice speaker and the fact that I was going to a school in Kent the next day and I was going to be talking to, I can't remember, there'd be 15-year-olds the whole of the year. And they were like, they were so delighted. And it just felt so great to be able to share that with them. It's so, so important. It really is.
You're so inspiring, John, aren't you? It's brilliant. It's amazing. So good you have it, Sean. Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the interview, but we'd like to have you on the show again.
Oh, you've got to come back
on,
John.
I've got so much more to ask you. So, yes.
Yeah, so this is part one. Lots of doors on lots of things.
One thing, would you give it, what advice would you give to someone who's struggling? You know, they've just got a diagnosis and they're struggling with telling people and or getting support. Or what would you give advice to?
I think, first and foremost, I'd say try and get some peer support on a one-to-one basis, because it's really important that you actually talk about what your challenges are.
Yeah.
And then if, you know, by talking with someone else, actually they might be able to help you with your challenges, because everyone will have different challenges. You know, I'll tell you another time about how I came out to my parents, but oh my gosh, that was a trauma in itself. But, you know, we have to learn about these things It is about go and chat to someone, but probably someone living with HIV.
Yes.
Really key. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So because they've often gone through what you're trying to go through now, and they'll be able to help you in and help you to identify your personal challenges, to be able to overcome them, and that's how you're going to grow and you're going to embrace HIV.
Thank you so much for coming on. Sorry, it's just a bit short.
Pleasure,
we'll get
as,
you,
as
get
always.
You on again. Yeah, so good, so insightful, isn't it?
Yeah, powerful. I know. Pleasure as always.
Yes. So
thank you very much.
We're going to play Destiny 07, which is
one. Was that your choice, John?
No, John, do you want to ski Sunday?
I wanted ski Sunday because I was like, yes, come on.
So did we have it?
We
did. Joking.
No, I'm going to play a bit of ski Sunday.
Oh, okay.
I played it earlier a little bit.
Ah, lovely.
I don't know what I was talking about anyway. Thanks, John, for coming in. And
Thank you. Take care.
This is 07.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb. I'm here with Anna Brewster, the Chief Executive of The Food Chain. Now, I know a lot about this charity because I met you 2 years ago when I was a service user. And I have an incredible affinity to you guys and what the work you do. But for those who don't know, tell us a little bit more about The Food Chain.
Thank you, Phil, for that very nice introduction. So, The Food Chain, we are the UK's only HIV specialist nutrition charity. We've been around since 1988. We were formed by volunteers in London who got together on Christmas Day and decided to cook a meal for their friends who were, at that point, very, very ill with HIV/AIDS, and the majority of whom were, you know, at home and not able to get out. So they decided to get together and cook a meal, cook a Christmas lunch, and then deliver it to their homes. And since that day, although our services have changed in response to the changing needs of the community that we support, we've stayed true to that very, very kind of compassionate basic idea, which is that people need nourishing, and we choose to do that through food. So with the HIV virus, even though now it's thankfully a very different time to 1988 and people are able to live very, very well with the virus, there are some people that still struggle. Those are people who are affected by poverty, who perhaps are living in situations of domestic violence, those who struggle to manage their medications through other chronic health conditions, or those who've simply fallen out of love with food and fallen out of love with self-care and the way that food can actually help to improve our overall health and well-being. So we stay true to that idea that, that food can really help somebody's state of health and well-being to improve. So the way that we do that now is, again, it's different to how it was in 1988, but it's still very much like about direct provision of that nutritional support. So we have three core services that we deliver. The first is our grocery delivery service, whereby we send a tailored basket of groceries to the homes of people living with HIV. That enables them to cook for themselves. We supplement that with dietetic advice that is provided by one of our two HIV specialist dietitians that we have on our staff team. We send recipes, we send meal ideas, we send meal plans, we send food and symptom diaries. And we also have a small hardship budget that enables us to send things like pots and pans and tin openers if people don't have those. So that service is really about enabling somebody to independently manage their food, their engagement with food in their own home. We also support dependents with that. So if somebody has kids at home, we'll send food that's appropriate for the kids. If there's a new baby and the parents can't afford to buy formula milk, if they choose to formula feed their infants, we'll provide formula milk for their baby up until the baby is 12 months old and support them with weaning advice as well. The second service that we run is Eating Together, which is how you and I first met.
Yeah.
That is a group meal that we run twice a week. We are based for that in one of our partner charities called Positive East in Stepney in East London. We use their kitchen cafe area to run a group meal twice a week on Wednesdays and Saturdays. A membership for that meal service lasts 3 months. And it starts on the first day that somebody comes to us. And it's an opportunity for people to come together and have a hot, nourishing meal. But it's also so much more than that. It's about an informal form of peer support. So if you come to one of our meals, you are going to meet somebody who's going through the same things that you are. But you're also going to meet people who might help you to understand what life is like for other people. who are struggling to engage with nutrition for whatever their reasons are. So you'll meet people that you have a lot of affinity with, but you'll also learn from new people as well. And it's really wonderful to see relationships blossom between people over the time that they come to see us. The 3-month membership also gives us as staff a really good length of time to get to know somebody and to really understand why they are not engaging with food, because food poverty or lack of good nutrition is really a symptom of something much broader. So the 3 months allows us to really get to know somebody, earn their trust, because trust has to be earned, and to really try and figure out what the best things we are that we can do for that person beyond just providing food. It might be a referral for immigration advice. It might be chasing down somebody's social worker to make sure they're getting an appropriate needs assessment. It might be providing them with some Oyster top-up so that they can get to their medical appointments or whatever it might be. So that 3 months allows us to provide a really holistic package of support that ideally by the end of the 3 months means that somebody's equipped with more tools in their arsenal to enable them to manage their own health and increase their own health and well-being. The third service that we run is called Eating Positively, and that's a cookery class, and it's a series of 4 lessons taught by one of our HIV specialist dietitians. And the idea behind that is not just to teach them practical cooking skills, so we teach people how to make a specific dish, but that dish that we make will also be accompanied with nutrition advice. So the classes are themed. One is on diabetes, one is on health, heart health, one is on managing symptoms and side effects of medication. And whatever we're cooking in that class will have real applications in managing those conditions. So the idea is that we teach the practical skills, but also the nutritional know-how to understand why diet can be so useful in managing health. We're still run largely by volunteers. We have a small staff team, but most of our services are delivered by volunteers. So all the food you ate at Eating Together, as you know, was cooked by lovely volunteers who come in twice a week and do all of the chopping of potatoes and steaming of broccoli and all that sort of thing. They're all fantastic. And we also have lots of volunteers that help us deliver nutrition advice. So we have dietetics and nutrition students that come in and support our dietitians to deliver that advice. We also have fundraising volunteers. I mean, you've been out with us.
Yeah.
They come out and shake a collection tin around Soho, get some donations in for the food chain. So yeah, we're very much, we owe our existence to our volunteers. We always have. And we're very proud to still be a very volunteer-led organisation. In terms of how people access our support, so we are referral-based, and about 70% of our referrals come directly from the NHS. So they come from HIV consultants, clinicians, community nurses, people like that. And it's when they have patients on their caseload who they realise are not able to access the food that they need to stay well. But we also accept referrals from other community organisations, so other HIV charities, homeless shelters, lots of different varieties of places. People are referred to us, and the first point of contact they have is with one of our HIV specialist dietitians, who then conduct a full dietetic assessment, give them all the advice that they need, and then decide which of our services are most appropriate for them. So it could be just one, it could be all three, it could be different ones over different periods of time. Our intervention is always short term. So the idea is that we kind of parachute in to a point in someone's life where food is an issue, and try and help them to overcome that particular time of hardship and enable them to move on and not need us anymore. That's the ideal scenario. Unfortunately, in the world that we live in now, what we are increasingly seeing is that we are a respite charity. So we're coming in to provide a short-term period of relief from food poverty or food insecurity that enables that person to not worry about food for that period of time. But their situation is enduringly difficult, which means that they might get referred to us again in a year's time for the same reasons. So it is disappointing when we see that happen, but it's also just a reflection of the world that we live in now, unfortunately. You asked me before what I'm most proud of.
Yes.
About the food chain. I guess I'm most proud of the fact that we're still here. It's not an easy environment for any charity, particularly a small charity. We don't receive any statutory funding, no public funding. All of our money is generated through community fundraising, grants and trust-giving organisations. So the fact that we're still here in our 37th year is something I'm very, very proud of. But that's also the most upsetting thing, is that 37 years, we're still needed. We're still needed just as much as we were in 1988. And that's not a nice thing. But as long as we are needed, we will still be here.
And for anybody listening who likes the sound of any of these courses, how do they get a referral? Who should they be speaking to in order to ask or to get that referral?
So the best person to ask for a referral is your HIV clinician. Or your nurse, whoever you see in your HIV clinic. The reason I say that is because all of the HIV clinics in London know us, so it's a quite straightforward thing for them to make that referral to us. We don't have many criteria, but we do have some. So one is obviously that you're living with HIV. The second is that we are a London-based charity, so unfortunately you do need to live in a London borough in order to access our support. And the third is that you're experiencing some kind of crisis. And we're not very specific about that crisis because crisis looks different to different people. But it's a set of circumstances that means that you're just not able to engage with food for whatever. That could be financial, it could be mental health, it could be physical health, it could be a myriad of different things. Those are our criteria. But if you don't meet those criteria and you still want to get involved, we have loads of resources on our website, which is foodchain.org.uk. If you're interested in learning more about HIV and nutrition, there's lots and lots of information on there, written and curated by our HIV specialist dietitians. We have videos on our website for cookery classes. So if you want to learn to cook some dishes that are good for your health and nutrition, we have step-by-step video guides on our website that you can follow along. We have fact sheets about different health conditions that are available in different languages. We also have audio formats for those fact sheets. So we've got lots of different ways that you can learn about HIV and nutrition. People can also volunteer. As I said, we're a volunteer-led organisation, so really keen to get more hands in the kitchen to peel those potatoes, but also running your own community fundraising events, you know, throwing bake sales or doing quizzes or whatever it might be to generate some income for the charity is always really valuable. We also have events, so we do bingo nights and quizzes and things like that. So you can have a look at our website on the events calendar to see what sort of things we've got going on and come along and see what we do and meet some of the community.
And you're based at Stepney Green.
Yes, we are. We use Stepney Green for our meal service on Wednesdays and Saturdays. We actually don't have our own premises as a charity, so we kind of squat, you know, we're in different HIV charities that are kind enough to let us use some of their resources. So HIV Positive East are a really valued partner of ours.
And for anybody coming to Eating Together who's struggling with transport arrangements, you reimburse them as well, don't you?
We do, yes. So we want access of our services always to be free, and by free I don't mean just it doesn't cost you anything to access our services. It also means if you have to spend anything to access our services, we will reimburse. So to get to Eating Together, yes, we'll always reimburse travel expenses for that.
I think honestly, like I say, I came to you when I was spiraling with drink and drug problems, and what I found most surprising about coming here is that I didn't realize how much I needed it or how much. So I think that is what I would say to anybody listening to that who might not think it's for them or might just be surprised. That what I loved about this engagement with this community is meeting people that I would never have normally met who are living with HIV, other people outside of my social circle who are incredible and lovely. And it's nice to kind of sit down, and we are all at different stages. Yeah. And some people just want to chat and some people want to be left by themselves. But that is what the food chain is to me. It's that kind of that opportunity to kind of come sit with others if you want some company and engage, or if you want to just be left alone and eat the food because it's delicious, you can do that too. But certainly, like, all the staff and, as you say, all the volunteers are so kind. And so also, I think a big thing is confidentiality. Like, even the building is unassuming. I've lived in this area and walked past the building so many times and didn't realise it was here. So for anybody worried about being seen to come in, there's no risk of that. And obviously everything that's said within the Eating Together sessions is confidential and kept private. And you know you can come here and be yourself. And I think that was what was appealing to me as well. I wanted to tackle my problems, but I didn't want to do it with my friends or my family. I wanted to come and talk to strangers about it because it was easier to talk to people here.
I think it's something we see a lot, is that it can be, there's a lot of bad stigma around accessing support. You know, if you find yourself in a position where you need a bit of help, it can feel kind of shaming. And I think that's a really, it's what the, another thing the Victorians did for us is they created this like power dynamic around what charity is, and the idea that you're either a giver of charity or a receiver of charity. And that's so disempowering.
Yeah.
And what we try and foster here is this idea that we are one community. Sometimes you're in a position to give back. Sometimes you're in a position where you need a bit more. We have staff members that used to be volunteers, volunteers that used to be staff members, volunteers that used to be service users, staff members that used to be service users. So we're a very like transient charity in the terms of the way that we use and operate within our community. And that's to try and reinforce this idea that like, we're not about, we are about giving, but it's about what people need and what people have a right to. We're a food charity. People shouldn't have to access a food charity. It's a basic human right. And that's what we're here for. We're here to give people what they need and what they deserve in this life. So there's no need for, as far as I'm concerned, there's absolutely no place for shame in this environment.
Amazing. It's been a pleasure talking to you, as always.
Likewise.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Phil.
97.2 FM. Radio Reverb. And welcome back to the HIV Hour on Brighton 97.2 FM. And we'd like to thank our sponsors, Jack Russell Technologies,
absolutely,
for keeping the lights on here at HIV Hour Towers.
Yes.
Now, I've got a little bit of local news, and it's quite shocking news. It came to light a couple of weeks ago for the general public, the inpatient unit, which is a 10-bedded ward at the Sussex Beacon, has been forced to close prematurely, permanently. It closed, I think, on the 1st or 2nd of February. It's quite a shock to anybody, because nobody in the community was expecting it. I think for those of us sort of working in, sort of behind the scenes and in the industry and things, I think with the success of combination therapy and people are living longer now, we've been aware that having a dedicated inpatient unit, which is not part of the NHS, has been difficult to fund, because there isn't the demand for the beds. I mean, the Sussex Beacon is a grassroots charity that, as well as the inpatient unit, does care services in the community and has contracts with social services and does things like the mindfulness course. But the inpatient unit itself was built at a time when four people a week were dying in Brighton and Hove. So it was originally built as a hospice. And the whole ethos of it was designed around treating people as human beings and not a disease, looking at the person as a whole. So, you know, you'd have people having reflexology and aromatherapies and massages and things. And these are people who were dying back in the day.
Safe place,
and obviously, and a safe place where you could go and, you know, your partner could hold your hands and in a private room, and you know, you didn't have other patients or other staff who were ill-informed judging you or treating you differently because of your sexuality or your immigration status. But obviously, since the advent of successful combination therapy, the need for those sort of services has diminished. Now, I've stayed at the Beacon many times since it opened. It was like, I think it opened nearly 30 years ago. So last time I stayed there was for post sort of rehabilitative care after a spinal operation. And it just meant I was too ill to be at home, but too well to be in hospital, and I could stay at this sort of Sussex Beacon as almost like a step-down unit.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was staying there because of my back, all my other conditions and things would be taken care of, and they knew about my HIV, I'd be with familiar staff. So the NHS Sussex contacted the Beacon in June of last year and said, we're going to close your contract early. Now, the Beacon's funded, six beds were funded by, I think, Brighton and Hove, and other beds were funded by East Sussex and West Sussex. But the funding that's been withdrawn is worth £1 million, roughly. The Beacon had just announced a new CEO who was completely unaware of what they were going to do. So it was a bit of a shock. So the Beacon and doctors within the HIV sector sort of challenged this decision, said, look, no, this is, why are you doing this? You know, at least let the contract run to its full term. And it just sort of went away and sort of scratched the fingers a bit and stroke the beards, and then they came back in December, just a week before Christmas, and said, no, we're still going to close you. Ooh. And the date is 1st of February. Mm-hmm. So the general public weren't told for 2 weeks. Obviously, staff have to be told, redundancies have to be planned for, and things like that. But what has shocked people, and it's been on the local television news, and if you look on BBC, search Sussex Beacon, you'll see it all in the headlines, is that these decisions have been made without consulting us as patients.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, I think, is just that disregard for how things are going to affect us. Just not even asking us. I mean, okay, make your decision because you have to save £1 million, but at least say, you know, but also don't just close without having care in place to follow on. So the HIV action plan will be launched in summer this year, the NHS Sussex have said they want to move into more of a care in the community based sort of kind of thing, which is great, but there's nothing in place now, and the beds have closed now. I know somebody with a terminal cancer who's receiving palliative care. He wants to stay at the Beacon in 2 weeks' time because the chemotherapy will just make his life miserable. He won't be able to care for himself, even let alone get groceries up the stairs. He can't stay there now. So what's he going to be doing? Are people going to come around and cook for him in his own home? I mean, I hope so. I hope the community will rally around the people that are left behind. But, you know, a lot of the referrals that have been getting to the Beacon recently have been for drug detoxes, so and mental health problems. So, the impact on other services now. So people, I think harm is going to be done to people in the short and medium term until proper plans are in place.
Yeah, there's nothing in place. Is there?
So please, I've been given permission by Rachel Brett, who we have invited, but she's unable to attend today at this episode. But she's given me an email address where, so you can actually email NHS Sussex and voice your concerns. Obviously, the decision has been made. The inpatient unit is shut now.
Yeah.
But if you'd like to sort of say what kind of future you want for care in Brighton and Hove and in Sussex, you can write to the NHS at this email address. It's sxicb.coms, that's COMMS, at nhs.net. That's sxib, sorry, I beg your pardon, sxicb.coms@nhs.net. And please also do contact your MPs as well.
Yeah.
The MPs are fully aware of what's going on. They're shocked about it. The community's shocked about it. let's have conversations about, you know, as John Jaques very eloquently said earlier, let's look at this as a challenge that we can then rise to. It's an opportunity for growth and to voice, say, look, what is the future of HIV care in Sussex? And, you know, we have, the community has led events for many years since the epidemic started. So the Sussex Beacon was created by the grassroots community. So let the community come forward again, and let's just say, no, let's do a needs assessment. What are our needs now?
We'll keep that on the show.
Indeed. Thanks so that's my news from Sussex Beacon. Sad news, but it's also an opportunity for looking forward.
Yeah, thank you, David. Mm-hmm. We've got some more community news, which is a bit lighter, actually. Sublime, which is a club in St James Street, which hasn't been around for a while. They've changed it to the...
Nautilus Lounge, wasn't it?
So Sublime is returning in February for a Valentine's weekender aid of Terence Higgins Trust.
Oh, good.
So Brighton's kinkiest club, Sublime, returns on Friday, the February the
John's 14th. Just got his ticket for that one.
John's disappeared. Get me a ticket, John. Friday, you've sent me all an itinerary. Returns Friday, February the 14th and Saturday the 15th for the Valentine's weekend. And so it's in aid of obviously sexual health charity. Trust. You're very welcome to go down there. It's called the Hanky Party on Friday. Please go down there.
Wow.
Dress code, fetish wear encouraged but not compulsory. £6 on the door, cloak room included, £1 of every ticket goes to the Terence Higgins Trust. And that is, I'll just give you the address. The Nautilus Lounge, 129-130 St James Street, Brighton.
I tell you, you've just come back from up north, haven't you?
Yeah. And what have you got, Sue?
Well, I've got something. Is it from GC? So it's Dine with the Stars, featuring a glittering lineup of top talent at your table. to raise funds for local HIV charity Lunch Positive. So,
yes.
So,
when is it?
So when is it? When is it? When is it?
I've just handed that to someone.
Yeah, so Dine with the Stars, a gala charity dinner in aid of the local HIV charity Lunch Positive will take place in the... What's that name? What's that say, John?
Paganini Ballroom, I think.
At the old
Paganini.
Ship Hotel,
the old
Brighton.
Shop.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. On Thursday, the March the 20th, from 7:30 to midnight. So,
So what day is that again? Sorry, I missed that.
That's a Thursday.
Thursday, March the 20th.
Oh, so it's still quite well. That's from Chester.
Yes.
So there you go.
Yeah, brilliant. I've just got a friend of mine's doing some free art classes for beginners, and it's free in February, a guy called Dan Swan. Wow. He's going to focus on the human anatomy, step-by-step focusing on a different section of the body each day.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to draw the human figure, this is the art class for you.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Lessons run every Wednesday, yesterday, the first one, 6:30 till 8:30 at Legends in Brighton. So just turn up with a sketchbook and a pencil, or that's not essential.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
they're looking for models?
I don't know, you'd have to pop down there.
Yeah, I'll inquire.
Why not?
Yeah, definitely.
And also the Sussex Beacon. Sussex Beacon are obviously doing still...
I must say, the Sussex Beacon is still doing all the other services that it does. So and there are quite a few number.
So they're doing the charity relay, which is the half marathon shortly, isn't it? So that's got on the... what date's that? 25th of February. So if you want to join that, one team entry for four runners... You can. I think it's £200 per team. So this year, all the Sussex Beacon charity relay proceeds will go towards the formula milk programme.
Raising funds for formula milk for people.
Oh, that's
lovely. Yeah.
It's such an amazing charity.
It does so much work. I've got one more quick one. The Lawson Unit, which is the clinic that in Brighton and Hove that has over 2,500 of us as patients. John and I sit on the patient panel. They've just had a new website, so it's a lot more user-friendly. You can see photographs of the staff, learn more about HIV. Mm-hmm. Just search your favourite Tinternet browser for the Lawson Unit, because it comes... So it's a long... It's not just Lawson Unit dot something. It's a longer word. It comes under Brighton Sexual Health.
Brighton Sexual Health.
Yeah, but just search Lawson Unit, you'll find it.
Mm-hmm. But it is a really fantastic.
It's much more improved. Yeah.
It's destroyed the studio. It's because it's going on holiday tomorrow, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've come to the end of the show. So thank you, John. Thank you for coming on. So good.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we really appreciate you listening to us. And we look forward to next time.
Cheery bye.
Cheery bye.
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 HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.